Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Well, it's time to wrap up our conversation with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. We've talked about the four of the five pillars of Islam, these teachings of Islam that really define what a Muslim is. This last one, the pilgrimage, is perhaps the most visible aspect of Muslim ritual or piety. It's called the Hajj, and you'll see it happen. You'll see it happen on television. In fact, it's covered every time it is done. We'll be talking about why the pilgrims make their journeys and why they make their journeys to the places they do with Dr. Alvin Schmidt here for the next, 20 minutes of Issues, etc. Chris Roseborough will join us after that to give us an update from, it's called the Reveal Conference at Willow Creek Community Church in South Barrington, Illinois. This very influential mega church is signaling a change in direction. And when Willow Creek changes direction, so do an awful lot of churches across denominational lines. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Thank you.
Why do the Muslims make their pilgrimages to these particular places? Why are these places, why are they sacred in the mind of Muslims?
Well, we're talking about Mecca. It really goes back all the way to, in a sense, it is a reenactment of what Muhammad did when he captured Mecca in 630, 2 years before he died. He grew up in Mecca. Mecca really hated and despised him, and so he had to leave the place in 622, taking his hijra to Medina. And over the years, he had in mind to capture Mecca. He finally succeeded in 630 with 10,000 men in his particular army. And so it's really the Hajj or Hajj is a reenactment of what he did. And, of course, the reason it's Mecca is primarily because that's where the Kaaba is. The Kaaba is what once was a pagan shrine had 360 pagan idols in it. He got rid of all except one or two. One that he kept was the black stone, which is still there and which is a focal point of attention in the Hajj, in that individuals used to be able, when the number was smaller, be able to literally kiss it as Muhammad did. Now, with several million people involved as they circumambulate, that is, surround seven times the Kaaba in walking, they are unable to kiss it literally. All they can do now is point to the sacred black stone. But before all this happens, you know, they come from all over the world. In fact, 70-plus different countries are usually represented. And it's usually for 5 days, from the eighth day of the last month of the lunar calendar, which last year was the 17th of December through the 13th. This year it'll be 11 days earlier because the Muslim calendar is 11 days shorter than our Gregorian calendar, so it'll occur 11 days earlier. It'll begin on the 6th of December and run through the 11th. And so when they get to Mecca, finally, on the outskirts, first of all, there is a number of ritualistic acts that they have to go through. On the eighth day, that's when they basically get there or get involved in it. They also have to do a number of other things. They have to, for example, engage in ritual purity. That means they have to bathe themselves, they have to cut their hair and their nails or have them trimmed. They have to remove jewelry, headgear, don white garments. That's supposed to make them all be equal, and hence no jeweler or whatever, which would be certain kinds of symbols that might indicate that you're more wealthy or different than another person. That hence those have to all be done away with during this particular period. And then at the end of this particular ritual, each pilgrim, if one wants to call them that, says, "Here I am, O Allah, at thy service." And then they enter the harem, which is basically a precinct sort of surrounding the Kaaba. And then they perform what is called the tawaf, which is circumambulating in seven times around the Kaaba. They also, in the meantime, are taken back and forth to a couple of places near Mecca. One is the town or community of Mina, M-I-N-A, which has thousands of tents, in fact, pitched where people stay overnight. And it's on this particular place, and between Arafat, that's another Mount Arafat, and Mecca is where Mina is located. And they are taken there, and in Mina there is a bridge specially designed where they then throw pebbles at a pillar symbolizing Satan or the devil. And they usually pick up pebbles anywhere from 45 to 70, and they're about the size of a pea that they throw symbolically at the devil, which is supposed to symbolize what Abraham did in terms of his temptation relative to whether he should sacrifice. Now, we would say Isaac, they would say Ishmael. And so that symbolizes, in a sense, try to go all the way back to Abraham. So that is a great deal. And when they're finished with the whole thing, that is the Hajj, they are basically, men have their hair shorn or at least severely trimmed, and likewise, women cut off a lock of their hair, but the length of the small finger, and to indicate that they have performed the Hajj.
So can you explain the significance? We've only got about a minute and a half before this break, but can you explain the significance of this black stone? I've seen pictures of it. It seems very well worn from centuries of handling by Muslim pilgrims. Why that particular object, still an object of veneration for, I assume, what from its very beginning has been a religion that would have eschewed any kind of, you know, of sacred objects?
It once was a pagan symbol, and you could argue it really still is. And what Muhammad really did, even the seven times of walking around the Kaaba, and like all of this goes way, way back before Islam. He incorporated a whole host of pagan activities, festivals, rituals, and he kept the black stone for some reason or another that he liked. And he did some of this, if you might say, for political reasons, to try and attract the Quraysh, that was a dominant people in Mecca, for example, of which he really was a descendant. And so, in a sense, that was involved in keeping it. And, of course, the stone is seen as sacred, primarily because he said so, and primarily because, I hate to say it, because he literally kissed it. And it is the focal object of the Kaaba today. And that's about the long and the short of it. It's basically a retention of certain pagan festivals that, you know, Islam is not a God-pleasing religion. It is paganism, and the basic thing that Muhammad did, he centered in on one God, namely Allah, as opposed to the many different gods they had before. But again, a lot of similarities were kept from paganism that went back 3, 4, 5, 6 centuries before his time.
And the building itself, the square building with only 30 seconds, is anyone permitted inside? I've seen diagrams of what the inside of this place looks like, but I take it, it's an empty building at this point.
It's essentially right. And given the great numbers of people are, it's impossible to really admit anybody.
Is this, are there any kind of rituals that go on inside the place?
No. They're basically all outside. It says the only ritual you could do inside is if you were able to get inside and literally kiss the stone, which is on the southeast corner of the inside of the Kaaba.
We're talking with Dr. Alvin Schmidt about the fifth pillar of Islam, the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca. It's a rather complicated affair. When we come back, why and what are the restrictions on this? Does everybody have to go? And if you can't go, what do you do? And finally, when we come back with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, it seems that all of these pillars, the confession of Allah as God and Muhammad as the prophet, prayer five times a day, fasting during the month of Ramadan, almsgiving 2.5%, or the great pilgrimage that Muslims must make once in their lifetimes. It seems like all of them, as Dr. Schmidt pointed out earlier, are really reenactments, simple reenactments of the life of Muhammad. When we come back with him, we'll talk about why it is so important for the Muslim to feel like he is walking in Muhammad's footsteps, why Muhammad is kind of the ultimate example of someone who could earn their way into Allah's favor. Our call-in number as we come to you live this Tuesday, October the 14th, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Rare privilege tomorrow on the program. We're going to have an entire hour conversation with Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn. We'll discuss Christless Christianity. Yes, indeed, there is such a thing as Christless Christianity. Thursday on the program, Dr. Carl Fikencher will join us on the doctrine of the Trinity. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, about five more minutes with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on the fifth pillar of Islam, the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, and then Chris Roseborough joins us from South Barrington, Illinois, where he is attending a church leadership conference taking place today at Willow Creek called Reveal. They're trying to change the whole way that everybody does church. Stay tuned.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Stephen Spinks, Julianne Nowicki, Paul Blumenberg, Peter Heinecke, Tom Stoddard, Pastor Stuart Pepper, Barbara Crandell, Michael Dornan, and Royal Bader. Thanks for your support.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with couple if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
You are my soul. This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Pro-life students throughout the nation will be standing up for unborn babies by keeping silent. It's the fifth annual Pro-Life Day of Silent Solidarity on Tuesday, October 21st. Students are taking a vow of silence to symbolize their many brothers and sisters who have been permanently silenced by abortion. They'll wear red armbands or place red duct tape over their mouths with the word life written on it. Brochures explaining their silence will be given to those who ask. The project is quickly growing with 19 countries participating. Visit today's program link at lifeissues.org for details on how you can educate others to abortion's deadly reality. The Day of Silence also lets pro-life students know they aren't alone in protecting unborn babies from abortion.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Hooray!
folks, if you have a question or comment on any of the five pillars of Islam we've been discussing with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, give us a call now. 1-877-623-6943. Or email us here in the studio on this Tuesday, October the 14th, talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, every Muslim has to make this pilgrimage. What if you can't? What if you're financially or physically unable to make it to Mecca once in your life?
It's a good question. It's never been answered, to my knowledge, anywhere in writing that I can find. It's just one of those things that's essentially ignored. Everyone's supposed to do it, but if you don't, what happens? I can't document to say that they've taken any given action against anyone to punish them for it. So basically, that's where it's at. I might also mention one other thing when we talked about the Hajj being basically a reenactment in part of what Muhammad did. There is also a little more to it. There's also the reenactment relative to what Hagar did in terms of, again, the mythology involved. She, being in this particular area of the world, was running back and forth to try in the desert to find some water. And so they perform, as part of the Hajj, the pilgrims perform what's called a say, that is running between two small hills, the Safa and the Marwa, to reenact what Hagar did to find water. And of course, according to the mythology, then she found water when Ishmael, with a heel, dug into a given place, and water came out of this place in the middle of nowhere of the desert, and that's called the Zamzam well. They have now, in part of the Hajj, you must also drink of purified water that supposedly comes from this particular Zamzam well. That's part of the reenactment there, too. So it's a massive ritual. As I said, it goes on for 5 days. And I were just to sit here and spell out each particular step, without you asking any questions, it would probably take me a half an hour.
Okay. We've talked about these five pillars, and you were at pains at the beginning of our conversation to remind our listeners that Islam is not a faith in the same sense that Christianity is a faith, but it is, in fact, a, I guess you could call it, a way of life, one that seems to be, according to these five pillars, modeled largely upon the alleged practices and life of Muhammad himself. Why is it so important that for us to understand Islam, that we understand it really as kind of doing what Muhammad did?
Yeah, because he was the key prophet. He was greater than the prophet of Jesus, as they would say. And so he is the one to be emulated, to be imitated, and to listen to. And of course, it's his words that are in the Quran, which is often not fully understood by people. But the Quran is essentially, and the best scholars say, are the words of Muhammad. And so he is the hero. Although they don't literally worship him, they give him all the human obeisance that you can give any individual. And so he is the key prophet, and he was also the last prophet. What's often not mentioned, as he himself said, I am the last prophet, and I am sent with the sword. And after he went to Medina in 622, he basically changed his method, and he said God gave him a revelation that he should now use the sword to make Islam grow, and he did. And he has continued ever since, and Islam has not really lost any territory in the whole Middle East and elsewhere that it has gained because of the sword.
Is this why you mentioned earlier in our conversation that some count a sixth pillar to Islam, that is,
yes,
jihad, the holy war against the infidel?
Yes, exactly right. Very often that is cited as the sixth pillar, jihad. It is not commonly mentioned, but there's plenty of Islamic literature that mentions that very thing.
Someone says, look, we've looked over Islam in this series on the five pillars, and it seems a pretty innocuous, harmless, perhaps even a peaceful and benevolent religion. 1 minute to respond.
All I can say, when people think it's peaceful and negligent, they have, for example, not read the Quran. The Quran is filled with more than 100 pages of violence. And I often tell people, don't believe me, go read the Quran. The Quran is a violent book, and all the violent passages are in the present tense, imperative sense, not something that is in the past or a descriptive thing of the past. And that's the only answer I can give. But if people aren't going to look and read it, they're going to believe the propaganda that they hear. And, of course, that's what is commonly heard. But it's never been a peaceful religion, never will be. And it even symbolizes itself by using the sword. which is one of the prominent symbols of Islam.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. You'll find out more about the book The Great Divide on the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being so generous of your time with us here on Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, and I hope it does a lot of good. Thank you.
Folks, if you appreciate the kind of series that we do here on Issues Etc., like this one with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on the five pillars of Islam, please help get your church to join the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations who will pledge to support Issues Etc. in their mission or advertising budget at a minimum of $1,000. If you want to find out how your congregation can become involved or become part of the Issues Etc. 300, just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Look at the sponsors page, and you'll find there a flyer that's all ready for you to download and print out. Very simple to do, and you can take it to your mission or advertising board at your church, take it to your pastor, and tell them about the Issues Etc. 300. Get the ball rolling as your congregation plans for their budget in 2009 to include Issues Etc., the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc., in your congregation's budget. It's the Issues Etc. 300.